නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, we were discussing Mahasunyata Sutta, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya. We can translate it as Greater Discourse on Voidness. Actually, before we come to this, we have discussed Anapanasati Sutta, where it is explaining in detail how to achieve, in a way, kind of a voidness, emptiness, or signless concentration. So some methodology is explained in the Anapanasati Sutta and basically in Satipatthana Sutta. And now we are discussing how one can further enhance it using further and further Buddha's teachings. Now in the Chulasunyata Sutta, the smaller discourse on voidness, Buddha explained how gradually one may eliminate various perceptions, various signs, marks happening in the mind, and to eliminate them, slowly reduce them, and then simplify one's perception. So more and more simplified perception, but on the other hand, mind goes fairly deep. So if we have so many perceptions, so many preconceived ideas, so much of signs and marks overcrowded or overwhelmed your mind, then it is very difficult to recognize what is true, what is wrong, and you can't get a proper decision. But on the other hand, when you have a very clear mind, then of course there is a higher possibility that you can see the reality, you can see the big picture. As a result of that, you can take a proper decision. Now, the greater discourse of voidness also explains some interesting facts, basically talking about how to grow this voidness, how to enhance this voidness. Now this happens actually in the Kapilavastu, where Buddha's birthplace. At one time Buddha was dwelling there, and at that time there is one Kala Khemaka, a Sakyan's abiding, Sakyan's dwelling place, and Buddha was staying there. And Buddha noticed that so many places are prepared for the monks. So he understood that there are so many monks gathered here. And then he inquired from Venerable Ananda, so why this so many seats are prepared? Then Venerable Ananda informed that now it is the time for preparing robes. So many monks have come together, and now we are going through that activity. So many monks are assembled here, so that is why these so many seats are prepared. But I mean, probably we might think that Buddha was quite happy that so many monks are there, so his sasana, the dispensation, is quite growing. But the opposite has happened. Buddha mentioned when bhikkhus are together, when bhikkhus are dwelling in company, so many people are gathered, then that is not the way to realize Dhamma. So Buddha mentioned, if one is rejoicing the society, if one is rejoicing the company, companionship, delight in company, then he may not be able to attain what is actually needed to attain through seclusion. Therefore, Buddha explained, it is not possible that a bhikkhu who delights in company, takes delight in company, and devotes himself to delight in company, who delights in society, takes delight in society, and rejoices in society, will ever obtain at will, without trouble or difficulty, the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of enlightenment, is almost impossible. So you can see the Buddha's teaching is therefore oriented to some amount of secluded practice. So that is why people are going for retreats, and monks are trying to find some secluded places. And so that aspect is fairly highlighted. Actually, it doesn't mean that one neglects or rejects all the society and just mind your own business. So that is necessary to some extent. On the other hand, when one has developed one's mindfulness, clear comprehension, some wisdom to some extent, so then you have to associate certain amount, the society, the monastery, the other colleagues or other fellow monks. So that association is also needed. So it's a kind of a balance that one has to find out. Say for example, if there is a monastery and there are say 50 monks are there, so they may come together during the alms round time. So they may, one after the other, they may going on alms round. And may, once they return to the refectory, so they may have their meals together. And similarly, there may be a situation where they go for chanting. So the whole chanting may be conducted by the whole Sangha. And there may be some activities where everyone's participation is required, like Sangha Kamma, various disciplinary activities. So there are all monks has together. But on the other hand, when it comes to the practice, so they always have to find their own seclusion. So even in the meditation hall, even though there are many monks are gathered, so once they close their eyes, so they find their private space. They find their own seclusion. So that is required actually. And if they are in a far away kutis, then while being at their secluded kutis, isolated kutis, they also they can find easily this seclusion. So the seclusion in terms of bodily seclusion, that is also important. And more than that, actually the seclusion from hindrances, chitta viveka, that is also important. And when these two are satisfied, one can aim for seclusion of defilements, seclusion of assets, so that we call as upadhi viveka. So therefore, these are different levels that Buddha explained in his Dhamma. And here Buddha highlights the necessity of being alone, necessity of secluded practice. And then Buddha further explained that abiding either in deliverance of mind that is temporary and delectable, or in the deliverance of mind that is perpetual, unshakable. Now these are different sides of the practice or the fruits of the practice. So when one is developing samatha meditation, tranquility meditation, one can go through this deliverance of mind which is coming through samatha practice. On the other hand, there is deliverance of practice, deliverance of mind which is coming from because of the release of all the defilements. So that is the vipassana practice. So it may be a temporary situation in both situations, in both cases, but the latter one, one can make as a kind of a permanent solution. Say if you are practicing some vipassana techniques, temporarily sometimes your mind gets released. So nothing is grasped. So your mind is appear very clear and you feel lighter, less burdened, and the clarity is improved, and you have some well-balanced mind, so that we can say kind of a temporary release. But unfortunately, till we have various defilements, we again and again lose that deliverance. So that has to be further reinforced. One has to further remove defilements so that one's mind get further cultivated and well establishing this emptiness, well establishing this release. So that is actually the theme of this discourse. So what we need to understand is, so this temporary release can come through samatha practice as well. But that is quite vulnerable, that is quite temporary. But on the other hand, when one reaches that through vipassana practice, so that is also temporary at the beginning, but one may use it as a base, as a reference, to further enhance one's understanding, to further enhance one's wisdom, and to eliminate various defilements. Now, therefore, Buddha explains that if one is delighted in company, delighted in the society, it is very unlikely that one may achieve such complete goal. And then, Now Buddha explains how practically one may develop it. How one may achieve sunyata, voidness, internally. Now different many methods are available to develop emptiness. So Buddha explains first using the internal practice. Now, actually here before he going to explain that, he explained himself how he is somewhat inclined towards emptiness, because Buddha himself, being the teacher, is always being interrupted by various people. Maybe monks are coming and interrupting him, asking various questions and interrupting him. Sometimes kings are approaching him, sometimes merchants are approaching, sometimes farmers are approaching, sometimes other, say, lower caste people are approaching him, sometimes deities, celestial beings are approaching him. So likewise, he has become a universal teacher. So therefore, he quite often get interrupted. So Buddha mentioned sometimes his mind is inclined more towards emptiness. On such situation, he doesn't admire or he doesn't welcome such kind of interruptions. So therefore, he mentioned when he is dealing with this kind of mentality, where his mind is more inclined towards emptiness, he like to be in the emptiness or dwell in the emptiness. During that time, if someone is coming and trying to ask a question, then his answer may be very short and always in a way concerned with dismissing them, not to encourage the company, not to encourage the discussion, rather to dismiss them quickly. So you can see, being the Buddha, he himself has placed an example. It is not that 24 hours he spent time in teaching, rather he sometimes went for seclusion for 3 months. Sometimes he go on alms round alone. And as mentioned here, sometimes he doesn't encourage the discussion, rather he wants to have seclusion, he wants to have maintained the emptiness in his mind. So likewise, he has given a kind of an example to this dedicated practice. Now similarly, Buddha mentioned a bhikkhu, a monk, whoever the practitioner who is following Buddha's teaching and trying to achieve some purification in his mind, so he too has to follow the same path. So you can't be always compassionate and always accept everyone and always dealing with others' business, forgetting about your deliverance, forgetting about your own goal. So therefore, time to time, we have to understand where we are. Are we going through some sort of a downfall? Have we neglected our own welfare? So that is something we need to discuss. That is something we need to recognize and give some due importance. Otherwise, ultimately what happens is we are constantly slowly reducing our inner happiness, inner stillness, and ultimately we get lost again back in the various mundane activities, too much involvement with it, and ultimately we lose the whole balance and going through a real downfall. So that actually has explained in various other suttas as well. Say for example, in Majjhima Nikaya, there is another sutta called Sunakkatta Sutta, which I discussed in the Kalalgoda English Medium Retreat. So these are situations that we have to be a little careful of. Even when we achieve some amount of understanding, even a temporary freedom, we have to enhance it. It is not really guaranteed for us forever till we become arahants. So till one becomes an arahant, we have something to do. We have something to improve in ourselves. So therefore Buddha encourages continuous practice. So therefore Buddha mentioned here, if one monk wants to have further enhance his understanding, now here the discourse explains through the samatha practice first, and he may attain first jhana, he may attain second jhana, he may attain the third jhana, he may attain fourth jhana, and That's how one may steadies one's mind. One may sort of concentrate one's mind, because typically our minds are scattered, sometimes mostly distracted. So such a distracted, scattered mind is incapable of realizing Buddha's teaching. So it has to be developed as a concentrated mind. So there are different levels, different methods available developing concentration. To attaining jhana is one approach. And before jhana, there are many other concentration levels, like access concentration, neighborhood concentration, and then the absorption concentration. Now, if one is more inclined towards vipassana, at least one has to arrive or achieve access concentration or the neighborhood concentration. Upachara samadhi, neighborhood concentration, is much enough for one to continuing vipassana. So at least that is necessary. So that is why if we consider Anapana Sati Sutta, you can remember they are the first four steps are not much about vipassana. So first four steps are just being mindful about the breath, and later understanding whether it is longer or shorter, and then understanding the full breath, the start, the middle and the end. So that indicates fair amount of concentration being developed. You can't see the breath beginning, the middle and the end unless your mind is concentrated. So this slowly concentration improves as we develop mindfulness. So mindfulness is the thing that we actually can engage with, develop with. As a result of developed mindfulness, slowly we gather momentum, we gather concentration, and that concentration then one can use for the vipassana practice. So how much concentration is needed to begin the vipassana practice? There we can understand in the fourth step, passam bhayam kaya sankharam. So there the all bodily formations are calmed down. So that means in-breath and out-breath calms down. So you can't now distinguish whether this is the in-breath or out-breath. To that level, it has become well refined. So it is fairly calmed down. So at that level, one can say, okay, now mind has fair amount of concentration that can be used for vipassana practice. Now, when one achieves such level, and if necessary, one can go further on the samatha practice and achieve, say, jhana, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and using which one has to switch to voidness. So that is one approach, even mentioned in other suttas. So one can achieve jhana, and if one is capable, one can switch from jhana to voidness. But the typical approach is vipassana. Through vipassana, one can do that. Actually, even if one has to do the from samatha to voidness, still one has to have fair understanding about the dhamma, fair understanding about vipassana, but can take the samatha as a kind of a mechanism. But here, on the other hand, if we consider this Anapanasati Sutta or Satipatthana Sutta, the approach is little vipassana oriented, where one may develop some amount of concentration at the early stages, and later that concentration being used to realize the three universal characteristics: impermanent, suffering and unself. So as a result of that, one gathers fair amount of wisdom. So that wisdom helps one's mind to detach, to disengage from the ongoing process, and ultimately mind get released. So that approach is more practical and doable, workable, and therefore we typically encourage such practice, because then we know easily where we are and how much mindfulness is available, how much concentration is available, how much wisdom is available, so that one can assess actually to some extent. So as one continue one's practice, so slowly mind develops a certain qualities where one does not grasp, does not go and latch with something, does not get delighted with so much of sensual things, does not go for welcoming them and does not go for any kind of going into it, ajosana. Rather, one's mind may now start to have some sort of a dispassion, detached observation. So that ultimately leads to release the process, release the ongoing sankhara dhamma, this conditioned phenomena, and mind get released and maybe staying sometime temporarily in a kind of a freedom. So this freedom, we can say, now we are going to explain how to enhance, how to develop. Now, Buddha mentioned very practically that assume that some person has achieved this temporary freedom, but now he wants to enhance it. Now he wants to prolong it. Now he wants to stabilize it. So therefore he is now practicing various ways to do that, to master it. So therefore Buddha explains that in first sense, using the internal way, using internal phenomena, how one can, how he is trying to achieve voidness. Then he gives attention to voidness internally. While he is giving attention to voidness internally, his mind does not enter into voidness internally or acquire confidence, steadiness, and decision. When that is so, he understands thus, while I am giving attention to voidness internally, my mind does not enter into voidness internally or acquire confidence, steadiness, and decision. In this way, he has full awareness of that. So you can understand how practically Buddha begins. He's telling now there's a practitioner who is trying to achieve voidness internally, but he fails. Because most of the time, these situations are not easy. I mean, you have to go through a fair amount of practice in order to achieve it. Now, if you try to immediately put yourself into voidness, most of the time it may fail. Because the necessary amount of wisdom support is not available. Necessary amount of concentration support is not available. Necessary amount of mindfulness is not available. So therefore you have to again and again try hard to get this balance. So suppose you are keeping your attention on to some elements. So you can recognize there are hardness, smoothness, softness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, heat, cold, etc., etc. So different element characteristics are there, and you use that as a way of developing wisdom, developing a clear comprehension. And as you are doing that, you are slowly gathering momentum, and ultimately mind get released because you understand the impermanent suffering non-self, and using one of these techniques, understandings, your mind get released. So there's a kind of work involved. Sometimes you can't achieve it quickly. There are days actually this become quite successful, quite easily, where your mind is well balanced and you can achieve it without much problem. But there are other occasions, even though you practice diligently, still your mind not get released. So likewise, these are very practical situations. You can't expect perfect practice every day, every occasion. Things going up and down. So these vicissitudes themselves are actually teachers. So we don't have to discourage ourselves thinking that I achieved that on yesterday, but today my practice was kind of an utter failure. So you don't need to really discourage. So this is way it is. If yesterday everything was successful, today there is a higher possibility that you may go wrong. Because you may have higher expectations. You are practicing in order to achieve what you got on yesterday. So those high expectations themselves become hindrances. And probably you say how you dealt today, how you spend your time with others, whether those are detrimental to your practice, and what you eat, what you get, how you prepare yourself, And all these many factors actually matter in order to, for the practice or in order for the success of your practice. So likewise, through falls, actually we learn. So whenever we go wrong, it is not really a waste of time. Rather, it also helps us to understand how to handle it properly. And on top of that, how to bear such failures. It is not that we can go through everyday kind of a success story. Rather, it has always ups and downs. Always the 8 vicissitudes of life we have to go through. So that actually going through that, we become fairly a mature person, fairly a stable person. Even when we go through some suffering, we can quickly return, we can quickly come back to the equilibrium. The resilience is improved. So these things are really important. So therefore, don't expect your practice to become very smooth and always, as people are wishing that always the Sukha Patipada, and that is how people used to wish. So, but on the other hand, when you go through ups and downs of your life, so it helps us to understand more deeper aspects of life, and again to build a fairly mature, stable, we can say the term personality, but really the mind become fairly stable. Now, similarly, Buddha give other explanations that he sometimes try to achieve wideness using external things. Suppose there is a kind of a sound that you can hear. It is continuously kind of a vibration, and you are trying to use that as a mechanism to enter wideness. And Buddha mentioned he fails. And another time he is using both. Internally he is trying to gather momentum to develop wisdom by observing internal phenomena, and another time he is using external phenomena to develop wisdom, but still he fails to achieve wideness. And then sometimes he is trying using higher jhana. He is trying to achieve, say, arupa jhana, and through that he tries to incorporate into whiteness, but that also sometimes fails. So he actually, through these failures, he learns. He understands, okay, still these issues are there, still my mind is not well developed. Now he is further and further practicing. Now only way to become successful is the continuous practice. Not discouragement, not giving up, rather practicing it again, trying it again on next day. Now then, Buddha explained, then that bhikkhu should steady his mind internally, quiet it, bring it to singleness, and concentrate it on that same sign of concentration as before. Then he gives attention to voidness internally. Now, there may be some shortcomings in ourselves, in our faculties. That is why we can't reach voidness. So those we need to understand. Where did I go wrong? What is lacking? Is it the concentration too less? Is it the mindfulness weak? Or is it the enough wisdom is not developed? So what is the reason? That we need to honestly assess ourselves. Honestly understand what are the shortcomings. So those we need to now correct. So that is where Buddha mentioned, now he recognized there is something wrong, and therefore he is steadying his mind internally, and he may practice some more concentration, some more mindfulness, engages more in the mindful walking so that mindfulness become more prominent, and again engages more on walking meditation so that one's understanding develops, and one's sitting, you are trying to refine the practice so that your mind becomes gathering momentum. And if things are really going well, then the mind gets released. So that this release is at this level is a result. When all the conducive factors are available, then you arrive or you reach emptiness. Emptiness is a result. So you can't jump to emptiness immediately, so first of all you have to gradually develop the necessary skills. Then as a result of that, when it matures, automatically mind may reach emptiness. Now he is trying hard, and next stage he is become successful. He uses some internal phenomena for his observation. As a result of that, his mind get released and his mind get going to voidness. Suppose he is using various feelings. So there are various bodily feelings available, and he is able to recognize them without attaching to them, and he is focusing his attention more closely to these various feelings. Probably he may understand it is not a single feeling, it is a bunch of feelings, and each and every individual minute feelings are very short-lived, and he is able to recognize their quick arising and passing away. So while he is observing that very precisely, automatically his mind gets released. So this is a kind of a success story. So Buddha explains that next. So after explaining the failure side, now Buddha explains the success side. And suppose externally, say there are various sounds, there are even certain sights, probably one can use skillfully to develop vipassana. So you are keeping your attention there, and you can understand certain things are dissolving. So dissolution probably may be evident for certain practitioners, especially when their concentration is very high. Probably they can see that things are rising and passing away. So he can use that as a mechanism to develop wisdom. So when that wisdom matures, so again mind get released. And probably one can use both. Internally some time you spend, and if you feel tired you seeing the internal phenomena, probably you can sometimes spend some time observing external phenomena. So in both ways you are now benefiting, improving your wisdom. As a result of that, mind get released. And sometimes he may go through say some other practice, and using which trying to jump to or putting your attention to imperturbability or the this voidness. Sorry, from imperturbability to the voidness. So that is actually explained in Sunakkatta Sutta, how one is going through stage by stage to very refined absorptions, and from there, if one is capable, one can let go of the very refined perceptions, and one can take one's mind to signlessness or to voidness. So the various methods are available. So these are now Buddha explaining as success stories. My mind, so while I am giving attention to imperturbability, my mind enters into imperturbability and acquires confidence, steadiness and decision. In this way, he has full awareness of that. So likewise, Buddha here explains Aninjan ko manasikaroto Aninjaya chittang pakkhandati pasitati santittati vimuchyati itta tatta sampajano hoti. So all these things in a way highlights mindfulness, because when you are going through your practice to gather momentum, you are quite mindful how it is fairly developing. And when you reach voidness, while being in the voidness, that also you know. So there is a repeated statement, in this way he has full awareness of that. In this way he has full awareness of that. So every time, whenever you arrive some understanding, whenever you arrive voidness, whenever you arrive a jhana, whenever you arrive some vipassana concentration, you are well aware of that. It is not kind of a delusory state. It is not some kind of a hidden state that your mind can't be hidden there. You can't have kind of a drowsiness there. You can't sleep there. So you have to have full awareness. So this is something, another point that we can recognize from this sutta, Because sometimes when people go through some certain kind of concentrations, so that concentration takes you to a place where you don't know anything. Very much like sleeping. It is not really, you can't say really the sleeping, but still you don't have any awareness. So such kind of, say, concentrations are not really fruitful. So those have to be avoided, because if your mind get really routine to that sort of higher concentrations, once you sit, mind go and lock itself there. No use at all. You may even spend hours while being there, like lock yourself in a refrigerator. No use. But on the other hand, you can recognize in this sutta, Buddha again and again highlights, in this way he has full awareness of that. In this way he has full awareness of that. So where he is, he has full awareness. He knows where I am. He knows where his mind is. So this full awareness is very important. And he knows throughout the practice there is a certain amount of balance awareness is maintained. And once mind is get released, there also you have some balance awareness. It is not that you are going to sleep. Actually, at the beginning, mind can go to sleep as well because of lack of awareness. So that we need to rectify. So as we continue the practice, so these, say, shortcomings we have to overcome, and we have to have a kind of fully aware mind. Mind knows where it is. Mind knows what the state of the mind. So therefore mindfulness actually operates as the observer. So if you can remember that I was explaining in Anapanasati Sutta regarding the bojjhangas, enlightenment factors, I have explained that bojjhangas belongs to three groups. One group actually encourages more activity. That is the investigation, dhamma vichaya, viriya, effort, and piti, rapture. So that group actually encourages more activity, more active state of mind. On the other hand, the other group, which is the passaddi, tranquility, and then samadhi, concentration, upekkha, equanimity. So that group actually more encourages calmness. So if calmness is too much, then you probably may go to drowsiness. You probably may go to sleepiness. On the other hand, if active side is too high, excessively high, then your mind get agitated. So these two sides has to be well balanced. So the factor telling us what is the present state of mind is nothing but mindfulness, sati. So the mindfulness has a pivotal role in this whole process. So you have to maintain fair amount of mindfulness in order to verify whether mind is smoothly going through the practice. Mindfulness is therefore always present. That is why Buddha mentioned very beautifully in Aggi Sutta, Satiko ahang bhikkave sabbattang vadami. So every time monks, I recommend the awareness, or the presence of awareness, presence of mindfulness. And here also, Buddha highlights every time that in this way he has full awareness of that. Now, let us, 747, let us a little bit go further. Now, as he continue, now Buddha very beautifully highlights, when a bhikkhu abides thus, if his mind inclines to walking, he walks. Now you can see, it is not always sitting that you are trying to achieve it. Rather, after some time, his mind now somewhat inclines towards walking. He feels that now I have sat for a long time, better I go for a walk. Better I develop the same practice while in walking. So this is how it is expanding. It is not only limited to a single posture. Rather, Buddha wants to enhance this to other postures as well. So therefore, very beautifully here, Buddha highlights that his mind inclines towards walking. Now, while walking also, he wants to try this. It is of course difficult because at the beginning, you need fair amount of preparations to reach it. So that is why maybe most of the time in walking, you may fail. But slowly, as you build up confidence, you may get, even for temporary, very short time, the whiteness while in walking as well. So that we have to try, that we have to enhance. And there's another interesting point highlighted here. While I am walking, thus, no evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief will beset me. So his mind is more refined, more motivated, or more inclined towards kind of a purity. Because he is slowly developing purity through this voidness. So while his mind is dwelling in voidness, his mind is completely pure, free from defilements, free from attachments, free from grasping. Now he has a kind of a wish. May my mind be free from any defilements. So this wish is important. Because probably you can remember in Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha explained certain qualities that one has to maintain in one's practice. Atapi sampajano satima. This atapi. Atapi is not merely effort. Atapi is an effort where one's trying to maintain one's mind free from defilements. He wants to overcome defilements. He wants to purify his mind. So Buddha's teaching therefore highlights this purification, highlights the freedom from defilements, highlights the freedom from upadhi, assets. So therefore the practice has to properly orient in that direction. So sometimes we can't have all these proper orientations at the beginning. But as one's mind matures, so one needs to recognize what are the causes which are disturbing this voidness. What are the causes again and again dragging my mind back to kind of an attachment, kind of a tension, kind of a disturbance, kind of an agitation? What are the causes? Agitation is a result. Say restlessness is a result. So what is the cause? So those causes have to be eliminated. So when those causes become weaker and weaker, then of course the result may be available. So therefore there is a kind of an internal wish. May my mind be free from defilements. May my mind does not attach towards the defilements. May my mind does not encourage delight in defilements. So this is a kind of a inner resolution one may has to have. So this actually leads the mind towards that direction. You have kind of an inclination towards the purification. Have some inclination towards very pure state of mind. So that inclination quite helpful. So as a result of due to some habitual tendencies, mind may go and start grasping. But you have maintained kind of a very innocent wish in yourself. May my mind be free from defilements. While I am walking, thus no evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief will beset me. So this is a kind of an innocent wish. So now he is going and engage in the walking practice. So while doing that, probably his mind may get into voidness. Probably may not. So likewise, he has to enhance it. He has to encourage the practice. He is now trying to dwell in emptiness. So dwelling in emptiness, sunyataya viharati. So dwelling in emptiness is the correct terminology that one has to have. So more and more dwelling there, spending time there. So if you are able to release your mind, just dwell there. Don't try to ask what next. Whenever we ask what next we need to do, so that indicates some kind of a bhava tanha, that I want to become someone, I want to become some more. So without fully contented being in emptiness, so you are not sort of supporting the proper practice. So mind was engaged with so many activities, mind was dwelling with so much of unnecessary things, thinking, ruminating, proliferation, sort of depressive thoughts, overexcitement, this and that, so much of such kind of activities. But ultimately, thanks to Buddha's teaching, that we were able to achieve some kind of calmness, kind of whiteness, kind of pure state of mind. So once we reach there, we should enjoy that. We should make it as a kind of a blessing. Rather than they are also trying to do something, first of all, we need to understand how to dwell there. So that is why Buddha encourages to reach there and to maximize it. It is not as a kind of a concentration and then attached with it, kind of addicted to that. That is not the case either. But first of all, we need to recognize this state, well established there, fairly stabilized there. Then only we can use that as a kind of a mechanism, some kind of a base to eliminate defilements. Now, therefore Buddha encourages not only in sitting, while in walking one has to develop it. Then while standing one has to develop it. While sitting one has to develop it. While lying down one has to develop it. So likewise you can see in this greater discourse of whiteness, Buddha encourages all the different possibilities one has to explore. How to enhance whiteness in all the postures. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Next, we will see how further Buddha explained this sutta. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Sadhu. So if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them through the chat.
So everybody seems in whiteness, so no questions. Jennifer, are you too in whiteness?
I don't think so, Bhante. Maybe good. Quite the opposite. How would you think through everything that you had just mentioned and trying to fully understand? Chita Devi, you may ask your question.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, you kept mentioning releasing the mind when you were explaining.
Yes.
Can you just elaborate on when you say we release the mind? Can you just explain that a little further, if you don't mind, please?
Yeah. Now, say for example, I'll take Vedananupassana as an example. Suppose
yes.
You are practicing Vedananupassana and you are observing various feelings, and at first you may feel, okay, this is a pleasurable feeling and this is a painful feeling. A painful feeling arises and spend a couple of minutes and then it fades away. So this is the very basically preliminary understanding that you may get. And later as you enhance your practice, you further recognize, okay, it is not a single pleasurable feeling, it is not a single painful feeling, it is a collection of feelings. There may be thousands of minute feelings as a group manifest as a single painful feeling. So that understanding is another level. So you are breakthrough to the compactness, the Ghana Sanya has now broken, so you understand it is not a single painful feeling, rather it consists of thousands of minute feelings. And assume that you are further refining your attention and paying attention to each and every minute feeling, and there you may understand, okay, these are not long lasting, these are extremely transient, they quickly arise and pass away. So I mean, it's very much like Buddha mentioned as a simile. For example, like a rainfall happens to a kind of a reservoir, where each and every raindrop causes to generate a water bubble and it quickly bursts. Another water
Yes.
bubble, it quickly bursts. So if you get the big picture of such kind of a heavy rain, you can see the surface of the water surface, you can understand, okay, they quickly arise and pass away. Similarly, such kind of a picture probably one may see through the practice in especially in the Vedana Anupassana. So more and more you recognize that, you can understand this actually not limited to pleasurable feelings. This is common to painful feelings. This is common to equanimous feelings. So all the feelings have this kind of a situation. Now you lose information about whether it is pleasurable, painful, or equanimous. What you know is nothing but arising and passing away. Something is there. Everything is arising and passing away. It is so rapid. And you can't recognize whether it is happy or pleasurable, painful, or equanimous. That perception's gone now. Now you know something is there, some feelings are there, everything is so vulnerable, things are rising and passing away. So this is another level that you reach. And then, suppose as you continue, so this actually develops a fair amount of dispassion in your mind. Now, typically, when there is happiness, pleasurable feelings, we always want to attach to that. We want to grasp it, we want to claim it. And whenever there are painful feelings, we want to reject it, we want to get rid of them. And equanimous feeling, those are quite boring, I want to jump to pleasurable feelings. So this is the typical approach we have. But now, when things become more singleness, then you can't attach that and you can't even reject it and you have no control. So you become somewhat dispassionate. So your mind more disengaged in the process. So you develop kind of a separation from the process. So this is how your mind slowly release from grasping. And there may be a situation you are further enhancing this dispassion. You have a fair amount of understanding. And assume that this process has now become more blurred. You can't really get the sign. You can't really see whether it is circular or whether it is rectangular or whatever it is. The shape is not possible to grasp, not possible to understand. And whether it is painful, pleasurable, equanimous, that also you can't understand. You can't recognize. So all the signs, marks are difficult to get now. As a result of that mind release, because it can't take any sign, it can't take any nimitta, it can't take any shape, any color, it can't take. As a result of that, mind become completely free from signs. That we call as release, a temporary release. And that is, I have explained through the knowing impermanence more vividly. So through knowing impermanence, vividly, one's mind can get released, then we call it as animitta state. It becomes signless. So when it comes to voidness, actually the anatta, the non-self characteristics is more prominent. Say, when you see that this process is very vulnerable, completely transient, inconstant, where can we have a person? And it is beyond my control. They are rising and passing away very quickly due to their own reasons. It is not I am doing it. It is not some external force doing it. There are causes and conditions. They are also vulnerable. That is why the result also vulnerable. So likewise, some deeper understanding to selfless nature or a soul-free nature. You can't have a soul here. You can't have an everlasting soul here. And there is nothing significant here, nothing substantial. So that understanding, when one may grow, so it will release the mind through emptiness or through voidness. Yeah.
So we can apply that also to our when the breath breaks up, you know,
minute,
and also the body gets lighter and lighter,
mm-hmm.
and you can't have see the solidity. That also it sort of breaks up and kind of not permanent,
mm-hmm.
because it's and also it's beyond our control. So then that is the anatta nature because it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can so actually
we can apply that to the body as well.
Sure, definitely. So what actually I have explained is some bodily feelings. Similarly, you can apply to various element characteristics.
Yes. Sometimes it's easy because it's getting lighter and lighter, and mm-hmm. You can't feel it. It is like in particles.
Can definitely can.
Yes, so we can apply that to the same thing, right?
Yes. So actually, you can use Kaya Anupassana methods, you can use Vedana Anupassana methods,
yeah.
and even you can use Chitta Anupassana. I mean, you can watch how thoughts coming and going.
Uh-huh.
And there may be now you come through a kind of silent period. There are no thoughts, absence of thoughts.
Yes.
So at that time, actually, you can use that as absence of thoughts. You can use as a mechanism, as a kind of a pathway to achieve voidness. So that is possible.
So do we then just come to a state where, sort of when we are meditating, we can come to a state where everything comes to a standstill? Is that what Buddha meant by voidness? That there are no thoughts and... there's nothing like nothingness kind of thing. Is that the voidness that he's talking about?
We can say so. Actually, the activities have stopped.
Yes.
Actually, activities have stopped is not the correct terminology, because activities are going on. Mind is not interested about them. I mean, the body may be breathing. All the typical activities of the body is going through. But mind is not interested of them. Mind is not grasping them. And mind is not grasping to the arising part.
Yes.
So therefore, I mean, it may go through some understanding. It understood enough about the adinava, the disadvantages of this whole thing. So therefore, it likes to mind its own business. So it likes seclusion. It likes seclusion, basically. Yes, of course. Actually, you can understand like this. Now, when there is grasping, always movement is available. When there is association, there is always the movement available. So, because what you associate moves, what you associate is a conditioned phenomena, and whenever conditioned phenomena is concerned, it is always subject to some kind of a change, always subjected to some kind of vulnerable situation. So if you attach to that, your mind also become very vulnerable. Your mind also become quite unhappy, unsatisfactory, because what mind associates is naturally unhappy, naturally unstable. So, but on the opposite, when your mind has nothing to associate, when your mind is free from any conditioned phenomena, then what is the state? So that is where the mind become free. So that's a very beautiful statement in Channovada Sutta and several other suttas. Nissitassa chalitam, anissitassa chalitam natti. When someone or when the mind associates something, it always have chalita, always have the vibration, always have the ups and downs, always have the unsatisfactoriness. Anissitassa chalitam natti. When mind is free from any association, it is stable, it is still.
Yeah, so actually this state is when the mind is resting, it's just sitting.
Yes.
And just being.
Yes.
Without any attachment, without any excitement, without anything.
Correct.
It's just as if we are like the body sits down and rests, like that the mind is sitting down and resting.
Exactly.
So it is not. It is a very positive feeling, I think, from my point of view.
Definitely. Now we need to give due respect to the word voidness. Otherwise, yes. When we call voidness, when we call emptiness, it can give a negative connotation, negative meaning.
Yes.
But it is entirely wrong. This voidness, this emptiness is actually an absence of eye-making, absence of wrong self-view, absence of any irritation, absence of any kind of, agitation, grasping,
yes.
grasping, or even absence of delusion, ignorance. So this absence of all these negative things we call as voidness or emptiness.
Yes, because it's a very pure state.
Yes, exactly. It is void or it is impure of all these unnecessary signs, marks, perceptions, defilements. So that is why, if you can remember the previous sermon based on the Chula Sunyata Sutta, Buddha highlights at the latter stage, so one may achieve the supreme kind of whiteness when one's mind is free from all taints. When Kamasava is absent, when Bhavasava is absent, when Avijjasava is absent, then one can say his mind is dwelling in the supreme kind of emptiness.
Yes, and I presume that there are different stages also in that voidness. We just touch it like touching our feet in the water, it's the toes only, but as you go along, it gets deeper and deeper into a more pure and pure state, right?
Yes, yes. There are many levels. Actually, that is why Buddha explained in this greater discourse of voidness that you need to enhance it. So what you achieve at the early stages is very temporary. It may last only 1 minute. It may last only 5 minutes. And you may even not notice it. So that's why we need to cultivate it so that mind get really kind of an understanding this kind of a situation is available. Otherwise, we don't know even such world is available, even such kind of a skill is available in the mind. We always think that always our mind has to have something, has to think about something. Always mind wants a thought. And we define our mind as a thinking mind. If there is no thinking, we feel like no mind.
Exactly. Because we then sometimes want to go back to the breath also. When we just want to feel, we want to go back to the breath. Sometimes I feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is nothing. Because there is nothing.
Correct.
And then we want to hold on to something.
Yes.
And so we look for the breath.
That is a habitual tendency. So we want to occupy our mind always.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't find that state boring. That some people... Mm. It's boring and they want to get up and go, but I don't find that boring. I don't know whether I'm doing the correct thing or not.
As you improve your practice, so as you enhance your practice, so you don't consider it as a boredom.
Yes.
That's the point. Because the point is now for the mundane person, more activities, he is satisfied. Less activities, he defined as boredom. So that is why people are more tends towards the multitasking. So assume that he has to simply see a movie which is with less activity, no adventures, no sexual things or any kind of agitative things. So he feel bored. He may start yawning. He may sleep. Less activities. Even it is a film, for him it is not enjoyable. Suppose someone is listening to some soft music. It may have some very soft kind of a course. then sometimes people start to sleep because less activities. But on the other hand, if a kind of a film is quite adventurous, arousing a lot of sexual feelings, a lot of agitation, then people are not bored. They even open their mouth and look at it. Same situation.
Interesting thing that the Buddha said was that we can also, with progress, reach that stage during ordinary activities.
Definitely.
Stage of ordinance.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
So yeah, that's very interesting because sometimes when we are just sitting still, we might be able to get that into that stage without actually meditating.
Correct, exactly. Now the point is, that's a very good point actually you are highlighting. Because when we are too much prepared for meditation, so I want to meditate, now I get up, or I prepare my seat, I want to sit cross-legged, I have to keep my back erect. So all these are actually necessary as a beginner, so you need to do a lot of preparations, otherwise you can't do it. But later, so these kind of too much of preparations become a hindrance, because your mind gets somewhat conditioned. And that blocks you from going to natural awareness, natural emptiness. But on the other hand, suppose you are going in the back seat. Say your husband is driving a car, your driver is driving the car, and you are simply resting on your back seat. And assume that you are simply watching outside. There is no people, there is no, shops. You are going through kind of a paddy field, you are going through kind of an empty land. There's nothing there, and you are simply watching far sky is there, and your mind become easily calmed down, and easily your mind may go to voidness.
Yes, because it's not impossible, you know, Bhante.
Sometimes
when you are sitting and when there's nobody, you just can again like dipping your toes into the water. I mean, you know, one can feel that sense of contentment in a deeper way.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct. Exactly.
There is no wanting to do this or that, or no grasping or no desire. You just want to be.
Exactly. That's why I use the term dwelling in emptiness. So you can't dwell in emptiness when you are asking what next I have to do.
Yes. Okay. So basically, it is just the mind is still. Not doing anything, it's not trying to grasp, it's not trying to, it's just sitting there and feeling very comfortable.
Exactly.
Mind is feeling very comfortable. For a layperson, that's the meaning of voidness.
Yeah, I mean, not only for layperson, it is even for Buddha, that is it. That is why he is referring, in the Chula Sunyata Sutta. It is not only at that state or that in the past, Ananda, even now, I most of the time dwell in emptiness.
Which you can interpret as a state of contentment and happiness. Really.
Sure, definitely.
Would that be right?
Definitely. Because now, I mean, your body may be walking, but mind may be still.
Yes. But thank you, Bhante. I got it now.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Radhika for the next question. Thank you, Jane, for Bhante. Actually, I raised my hand because I wanted to thank you. Basically, you asked me to increase my walking meditation, and that was very helpful for me. So I thought I will let others also know, because I had been doing a lot of sitting and less walking. Actually, I over time increased my sitting to 1.5 hours, because I thought I should try to go to this voidness. I don't know what way I increased it, but I was just kind of getting bored and falling asleep, and it wasn't working for me. So in my mind, I saw a lot of doubt, and I wasn't getting
kind of, so I was struggling. Then you told me to increase my walking meditation, and I did, and that made a big difference. So I just thought I'll share that and thank you. So basically, after I did that, I found that in addition to, first of all, feeling the sensations on my feet when I was walking, that after, and I increased my walking to 1 hour, and I did a small walking retreat, personal walking retreat, of about 4 days. So that it was a very convenient thing, because the weather outside was very bad, snowstorm, we couldn't go outside, so I could do this easily. So then what happened was I started feeling the sensations not only on my feet where there was contact, but I started feeling sensations on my face, and I spoke with you about that, and then I felt like a cooling of my face. So I felt that I was having like what they call some kind of dark guna, because it's coming and going, and the temperature difference. So first it was when I was walking, right? But later in other activities, I also I started having that, and also I started having vibrations down my body. So basically, first of all, again, I had it with you when I was listening to Dhamma talks. But then, and of course, that's because it's in English and I understand. So it's easier for me to go into calm when I'm listening to an English one. But then I found I listened to a Sinhalese one, and I was just lying down and listening. And again, the same thing. So in addition to the fact I was listening, right, I was getting very calm. I could feel this sensation on my face, the cooling of my face, and then I felt this sensation on my feet and the cooling of my feet too. So it was coming in other instances, not only when I was walking. And then I noticed that my during this retreat, I noticed that I was more, I used to do Dhamma Upasana and I used to feel the emotions, right? But I was feeling this doubt and boredom, like, oh, that was the one. But I started feeling the emotions as they happen. And I could see compassion arise, right? Concern, depending on that. Say something happened. We got a phone call saying someone has got COVID, that we rushed to hospital. Something like some situation. I could feel those emotions immediately, right? The concern, and then when I hear that, oh, it's okay. It's now this is the fifth day, and they have been stabilized. I could see the change in the emotion. And I could go back and meditate with no problem. So there were different interruptions which happened, of course, because it was at home, and I could see easier than normal. I mean, normally also there are times when I can catch the emotion as it arises, and I could identify the root cause of it and all that. But here it was very intense. I could see it very clearly, and I could catch it immediately. And then in the instant where there was something which was harder for me to get over immediately, like that, to see the arise and falling away and get back into meditation after something had happened, I increased my walking, and that helped me. But I could see that my mind was agitated, that the sense of peace that I had during the retreat had changed, and then altogether everything was better there was an enhancement as far as my sitting meditation too, because when I get these this this sensation on my face and the cooling on my face, then I can straight away also identify the breath and see that the breath going in is cooler and coming out is warmer, going in is drier, coming out is moist. So that also improves. So I thought I'll just say that sometimes it's not for everybody, but that for me, that advice you gave me to increase my walking and reduce my sitting a little bit, which I did, really helped. And it not only helped me in the walking, but it helped me in the daily life, when, like I said, in the retreat, the phone rang twice and we had some conversation, somebody came. In those instances too, being able to see my emotions, and also in my sleep meditation. So I just wanted to thank you.
Good, good.
Thank you much, Mary.
Yeah, yeah, welcome. Okay, I think that's all. There are no more questions.
Sorry. Yes. Actually, there's one more question. It was sent through the chat.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It says, Bente, thank you for clarity. Still, I am wondering whether we are supposed to pay attention, which is proactive, or just become aware of what is arising as an observer of what we experience without any expectation. Thank you.
Actually, while you are dwelling in emptiness, there may be things that you can hear, because I mean you are not dead. Your mind, your faculties are so sharp. Only thing is, you may hear, but mind is not interested and going involved with them. Mind is not involved with them and asking what is it, why it is happening, who is doing that noise, making that noise, why he is doing that noise, blah blah blah. So that is missing. Mind simply hears it, that's it, done. That is why Buddha explains to Venerable Bahir, Ditte dittamattam bhavissati, seeing is just seeing. Sute sutamattam bhavissati, hearing is just hearing. Mute mutamattam bhavissati, what you smell, what you taste, what you feel through your body, that's it. And vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. I mean, there may be sometimes thoughts coming to your mind and you notice it and gone, it's gone. Assume that a single thought arises and it goes, or it leaves your mind as a single thought. You are not adding to it, you are not coloring it, you are not fabricating on it. It is simply going. So your mind is very much reflective in that sense. It is not absorbing anything, rather it is reflecting everything. It's like a mirror. So therefore, I mean, you can hear, of course, but it is just a hearing. You can see, it is just a seeing. You can smell, cognize everything, it is just a cognition, that's it. So that is how, I mean, we have to enhance our mind. So at the beginning you can't maintain it, because these certain things penetrate the mind and it may get your mind involved with them. But slowly we are increasing our ability to not to get involved. Not to get involved means things are there, you are fully aware, but there is no inner chatter, there is no inner agitation, there is no mental proliferation brought or kind of build out of that. So this is the practice actually we need to move forward. Yeah.
Thank you, Bente. May I also ask a question?
Okay.
So I have experienced certain meditation sessions where the mind is just aware, and it's not, you know, attaching to this or that, it's just aware. And there's this nice tranquility available. But then I've also experienced where when I just want to be aware, but mind would just attach to this and attach to that. So two quite opposite extremes. In the latter case, Bente, is that when we should apply or go back to the basics of, you know, using the breath or arising and falling as our anchor to kind of lessen this attachment of the mind so that we can just sit with just bare awareness?
Can, yes. Now, thing is, even though we discuss this some skillful things, so immediately we can't achieve it because we have some inherent latent tendencies. So due to that, sometimes they become active, more proactive, and then again go and grasp. So then the mindfulness will show us, okay, again the mind has grasped something. So at that time we have to use some mechanism to release the mind. So sometimes just looking at it, just knowing it, just being mindful about it would be enough. Then mind may simply leave it aside and simply become free. So that is the best way, and if it happens, no problem at all. And on the other hand, certain other times it doesn't work in that way. Mind still holding, mind still grasping. Then probably we can apply certain other methods, like explained in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where you see that how burden it is. I mean, how you have lost your lightness, you have lost your sort of calmness. That is no more. Again, mind has become crowded. Mind has become colored. So you understand this disadvantages of this grasping. Once you understand that, slowly reminding the mind of that freedom, reminding the mind of that simplicity, clarity, equanimity, then slowly mind may return back to that state. Or else you understand this nature, this new grasping nature, is a result of fabrication, result of construction, result of your own additions. You yourself has sort of weaved the net. So you understand that kind of a constructed nature, that also helps to disentangle the whole thing or unentangle the whole thing. And on the other hand, probably you can see what you grasp is impermanent. So there is something you have grasped. So that thing you are now little observing. Is it constantly available, or is it changing? Is it, is the same intensity available? So likewise, you do little analysis, observation, and that also helps to understand, yes, it is impermanent, no point of grasping. So that kind of an understanding probably can grow. And on the other hand, so due to weak mindfulness, mind go and latch onto something. Say you feel kind of... say boredom, probably as a result of that mind go and attached with something. Now slowly mind get tensed, so that also you can probably notice. At that time you need to arouse little amount of mindfulness, as you mentioned. So you are now little triggering the mindfulness. You are encouraging mindfulness. So it is a kind of purposeful mindfulness. Now you are a little encouraging. So again, as mind is little awakened, okay, it will remove the grasping. So different techniques are available, not just one technique. So whatever the techniques working for you is all right.
Thank you, Bhante. Yes, so many techniques, and it sounds like we can start with more of the subtle technique with least amount of effort.
Yes, yes.
To progressively more if needed. Okay.
Correct. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Then we'll wind up the session. We almost covered 1.5 hours discussing Dhamma, sharing our experiences and listening to the Buddha's teaching. So with that, we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past living relatives, with all the celestial beings, with all the beings who are in need of merits. Let's recite, or let's wish ourselves also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our minds, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු